The legend of the Inca giants who built cities is a fascinating aspect of Andean folklore and mythology, particularly in the context of the Inca civilization of pre-Columbia South America. According to Andean legends, particularly among some indigenous groups in Peru and Bolivia, there were giants known as the Horus, who were believed to have been skilled builders responsible for constructing impressive megalithic structures, including some of the iconic Inca ruins such as Machu Picchu. These legends often describe the giants as being exceptionally tall and strong, even with supernatural abilities that enabled them to move massive stones and construct elaborate cities with remarkable precision. It's said that they built these cities using only primitive tools and methods, yet the structures they created have stood the test of time and continue to amaze archaeologists and visitors alike. Ben, doing a little reading there?
Sorry.
A pop-out book. The highest quality of research.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
wow. That was, it's where you got everything you know. Just a series of pop-up books that we keep in the...
According to most people, that is
the
where
library.
I got it.
The little known fact, the Library of Alexandria was actually constructed mainly of pop-up
books. Of pop-up books.
Yeah.
With wonderful color and hardback copies.
Yep. Children love it. All right. So in this episode today, we're talking about giants.
It's a big topic, Joel.
It's a big topic. It's massive. I mean, this is the kind of topic that really is a topic that ascends even up into the clouds.
You have to back up ways to see it.
It just kind of towers above all the other topics.
It really does.
Right. Yeah. I mean, in order to even be able to begin addressing this topic, it's almost like we would have to have some kind of beanstalk. It's too on the nose. I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's,
I could almost feel
in order to get
too far.
I could almost feel the footsteps of this topic approaching from miles away.
Your YouTube metric drop-off rate is going to be high at this point. Yeah.
No, this is our best work.
Everybody's still here. You're our people.
Yeah, congratulations.
The real ones.
Yeah, the real ones.
All right, so I think we should start with the origin, biblical origins of giants, because we don't want to just talk. So we want to get into some of the legends, if we can, the Incas. I think that that's helpful because most legends and myth, as we've already discussed in previous episodes, they don't come from nowhere.
Yeah.
There's usually some underlining truth to it. The fact that there's a universal myth in every culture of a flood. Why? Because it happened.
There's a flood. Yeah.
Right. So we'll get there, like Cyclops, right? Cyclops, I mean, if you have, intermingling, interbreeding, it could be a defect, one eye kind of situation, but it's actually a giant, or it could be a giant that was in some battle and simply lost an eye, as an injury. But eventually people found this particular giant with one eye on an island, Solomon Islands or something like that. It's written into folklore, Cyclops. But the point is that there actually is a biblical origin story. Giants are real. And there's a biblical origin story of getting there that actually accounts for a lot, not all, and not necessarily every detail, but a lot of the mythology and folklore that we have today. Even more modern conceptions of giants. And so we'd like to eventually get to giants in the Americas. Mm. South America, even North America, people have dug up giant bones. And it's hard to, verify what is emphatically true, but, tales of not that long ago, even just, 120 years ago or so, Smithsonian deleting and memory holding giant bones.
Oh, yeah. Like that. So, and telling everybody that it was all fake and there was nothing real. Absolutely.
Right. So we'll get there. But first, I think we should start with the origin story. Either of you want to do the honors of biblically, how do we get the giants?
Absolutely. So, I mean, this is one of those things that many of the topics we cover, you don't know if it's even real or if it's some deception of some biblical thing, demons or whatever, messing around. But this is one, like you said, that it's in the Bible.
Yeah.
It just says it. they were. Right. Many times we see them develop all the way through the Old Testament, and they begin all the way back in Genesis. In Genesis chapter 6, we see that the sons of God came into the daughters of men. The Nephilim were in the earth in those days, and then the mighty men of renown come from them. And from this line, we see in Genesis 14 to 17 kind of region. Ben, am I remembering that right? Where we see the first Rephaim and
Abraham.
Yeah, with Abraham.
Yes.
And then Numbers 13, we continue to see them in the land of Canaan. But they're all seeming to come from this wellspring there in Genesis 6.
Yeah, so Genesis 6, you know, the sons of God came into the daughters of men, and the Nephilim and the mighty men of renown. And when the translators of the Septuagint reached that section of the Bible pretty early on, they, without hesitation, without second thought, translated Geborim, mighty men, into giants, gigas, the Greek word for giants. And not only that, but well before the Septuagint, the understanding of the Jewish religious leaders were, of course, that these were real giants. These were very tall, man-like humanoids that came from the sexual intercourse of fallen angels with women. And then it's in Genesis 19 that we get Abraham and his kind of rescue mission with Lot.
Yeah.
And the reason that all of that's necessary is because these kingdoms in the east were going to assault the Jordan Valley, because the kingdoms in the Jordan Valley had been rebelling against the kingdoms in the east. And all of the Jordan Valley people were like, well, we don't really have to worry, because they have to come through the northern regions. And that's where the Rephaim
live. That's where all the giants are.
That's where all the Zamzumim. Yeah. That's where all the giants are. So we're going to be fine. They're not going to get through the giants. They do.
Well, they did.
They carry off Lot.
Yeah.
But what's fascinating is that they're not worried, because they're like, we have an army of giants, and they're not going to let the kings from the east just march right through their land. And then eventually we get to the spies that go through the promised land and scope it out and come back saying that we were like grasshoppers
right? in front of these guys.
Before
for the Anakim. Yes, the Anakim.
The Anakim, the sons of Anak, which also, you know, is sort of a word for desert and wilderness.
And I believe it's Amos that says, you know, talks about them being as tall as cedars.
Tall as cedars.
And, you know, anybody can do a Google search, and what you'll probably find is cedar trees being between 120 like 100 to 120 feet tall, or even 150 feet tall. But there are particular cedars in that region. I did a little bit of research of my own in a pop-up book, and actually on the internet. So it's less reliable than a pop-up book. But there are cedars in the Mesopotamia region that are, you know, anywhere from 40 to 60 feet tall. So that's absolutely, I think, plausible that... that giants could have been that large, and we have some theories of how they could have gotten, you know, to that height.
We also have Abraham communing with giants when he's in the promised land.
Teaming up with them.
Right, teaming benevolent. Up with them even, with the oaks of Mamre and all the stories surrounding that. So this is something that permeates the text of the Old Testament and the New, and it's something that has to be reckoned with. And so, I mean, one of the things that we have to then ask is, well, what else? What else comes from the giants? How tall were they? Where did they go? What happened to them? Right. How did they survive the flood? All these types of things.
Right. Let's talk about, I think that would be helpful for a moment. Like with the flood, you know, there's a lot of theories of, well, how did the giants return? Because we know they're there pre-flood, Genesis 6. But then we also know that from Numbers, Joshua and the conquest of Canaan, and even still underneath Moses as, you know, the supreme leader of Israel at that time, that he sends out the 12 spies. Joshua and Caleb have a good report, but the bad report, notice the text doesn't say with these other 10 spies that it's a false report, that they're spewing out lies. And a lot of people will interpret that way because they want to get rid of giants. See, they're lying about the giants being there, and that we were like grasshoppers in their eyes, you know, or in their sight. Because they're lazy, or because they're fearful. This is just to, the language of the bad report, grasshoppers, is just to show you not how formidable the threat was to Israel and what Yahweh was able to accomplish. No, it's just to show you how sinful the 10 wicked spies were, how fearful they are, that they're willing to lie and actually embellish the threat and make it far more than it actually was, which I, you know, obviously all three of us don't take that view. I think it's not that these 10 guys are bringing a lying, deceiving report. It's just a bad report. Whereas Caleb and Joshua, they don't discount them, and they could have. Upon the evidence of two witnesses, they could have said, no, there's no giants. There's just straight up lying. But that's not what they say. In essence, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but in essence, their counter is not, there's no giants. Their counter is, we can take them.
Yeah, right. The story is meant to highlight the faith of the two of Joshua and Caleb,
right?
Not necessarily to highlight the deception of the other 10.
Exactly. It's not so much about the fear of the 10, it's the faith of the two.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. They didn't say, you guys are just exaggerating. The grasshoppers is kind of a stretch. They were 6'6". You're like,
Just so, and that's something that we, you know, we'll get there in a second. Goliath, 6'6" versus 9'9" mm-hmm. and the royal cubit and mm-hmm. these kind of, but with that, so we know, establishing that we have giants, large giants, not just before the flood, but after. So how did the giants make it through the flood? Let's start there.
Well, the one view that I think we can all agree on is silly.
That let's just discount it right now.
Is it comes from a Jewish midrash of the Old Testament.
Yeah.
And it basically says that some of them, specifically Og, who later became king of Bashan, that Moses drove out.
Og's
and,
bad.
And killed. Yep. It was 14 feet long and 6 feet wide. The story is that he clung on to the ark and he swore to Noah and his sons, I will be your slave forever if you help me. And so Moses drilled a hole Noah. Through the side. Oh, yeah.
And then Moses came. Noah was crazy.
Noah was the flood guy. Yeah. And so Noah drilled a hole through the side of the ark and he fed Og every day to
as
help
he clung
him.
There.
Right, as he clung. Oh, there. And wow. then later he was not their slave, but instead actually was a terror to
He went
Israel.
Out and did bad stuff. Gilgal, Rephaim. I mean,
right.
I mean.
So I think that's dumb.
Yeah.
But that has been an idea that has been put forward mm-hmm. by many people.
And along, this would be in the same category of that idea. They went underground.
Yeah.
Nope. They built rafts. They saw what Noah was doing, or you know, the watchers, fallen angels, you know, knew that the flood was coming and gave them fair warning. And so they built their own rafts and blah, blah, blah. I don't buy that either. But then, you know, so that's all in one category that I think is least compelling. Another category, and just for the record, the reason why I think it's the least compelling is, one, we just don't have anything in the biblical narrative of somebody hanging onto the ark.
Yeah.
Two, because again, part of it, we're thinking, you know, working within the parameters of the biblical narrative, but then the overarching character and nature of God. So we're highlighting, you know, like the same thing we said for the 12 spies. No. It's not that these 10 spies are so lazy or so fearful that they're willing to lie about there being giants. No, it's to emphasize not the fear of the 10, but the faith of the two. And even higher than the faith of the two is the faithfulness of Yahweh, who can, which later Amos talks about that. Did I not take out the Amorites who were as tall as cedars, right? And that's God speaking through the prophet. So God himself saying, I took out, and God's not minimizing their height because God is saying, look at what I did. Look at my faithfulness. I took out giants, and not giants because they were the equivalent of NBA players, right? You get that a lot. You know, people say, oh, this they're giants today. Yeah, they're in the NBA. No, we're not. Or they'll say even less than NBA players. They'll say giants were, you know, like 6 feet, but the average Israelite was 5'2", you know? And
right.
No, I don't buy that either. And so so all that being said, I think, you know, building rafts or hanging onto the ark or going underground, the reason I don't like that, a number of reasons, it's not in the biblical narrative, but also I don't like it because it belittles the character of God. God, think about this. God sent a global flood to wipe out everything in which there was breath in its lungs. And the main thing he's trying to wipe out, he fails.
And also—
So he kills everything to kill primarily one thing and doesn't kill that, but kills everything else.
Right.
Like it makes God a dummy.
Yeah. Kind of a—
I reject it.
Like a child trying to figure out how to play with a blongo ball set where it's just fumbling over and over. But even contrary to that, the biblical narrative says— that the flood succeeded in killing everything that had breath in the earth in those days.
Right.
So you would have to actually just directly contradict scripture if you say that anything not on the ark survived.
Right.
Nothing that was not on the ark survived, and it doesn't say that Og held onto the side of it. That's Jewish cope.
Right.
So we're not going to handle that.
Yep, with you. So Noah, perfect, right? So some people are going to go there. And I think there's some credence there. Perfect in his genealogies, his generations, that he didn't have Nephilim blood. It's not corrupted. That's part of what the Watchers, the fallen angels, were trying to do was to corrupt the bloodline, to ultimately to thwart the messianic line.
The seed of the woman.
Right, the seed of the woman.
The head of the serpent.
Exactly, that Christ would eventually come from. And the reason I don't like this one too, that, so according to this is you have, you know, with the daughters, daughters-in-law of, Noah, one in particular, Ham's wife, that she has, you know, fallen angel blood, Nephilim blood, a descendant of them. And then, you know, through them, Cain and then his offspring, you know, become giants, same overarching 30,000 foot view. God sent a catastrophic global flood to wipe out everything in which there was breath in its lungs. But the main thing that he's trying to wipe out, he missed.
Right.
So I'm not the biggest fan of that one. Some even say, you know, Noah was drunk in his tent and passed out. He got drunk because he was grieving. And he was grieving because Cain had just been born, Ham's son, Noah's grandson, and he was born with six fingers.
Oh boy. Interesting. We're excited.
And so, yeah, we're excited. I made it up. We're excited. Bong pipe. But, yeah. But you know, in that conception, it's Noah, like this great grief of like, you wiped out all the world, God, and the problem's still here. Oh no, you know, and then they would say that, and that's why he doesn't say cursed be Ham because of something that Ham did, but rather cursed be Canaan. I can see the curse in his, you know, 12 toes and 12 fingers. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. I prefer the interpretation that he says cursed be Canaan because Canaan is the offspring of Ham's sin.
Right.
Where Ham takes his mother and Canaan is the product of that union. Yeah. I think that tracks way better.
When it says uncovered the nakedness of his father, this is a euphemism in scripture.
Right.
It's used for inappropriate sexual activity in general, including uncovering the nakedness of your mother.
Right.
So that to me is much more satisfactory and fits in the immediate context.
Yes.
Much, much more neatly.
And therefore the son is cursed because it came from an unholy.
Right. Right.
Real quick, before we continue with the show, you need to be aware that you're merely watching one episode of what's actually a 10-part series covering all things under the banner of high strangeness. The 10 episodes include the following. Number one, the lost city of Atlantis has just recently been discovered. Episode number two, Hollow Earth, the last living dragons, and primary water. Episode number three, biblical giants, their clans, sizes, and supernatural abilities. Episode number four, mythological giants. Hercules was actually a Nephilim. Episode number five, everyone has been wrong about Bigfoot. Episode number six, fairies, the elemental spirits. Episode number seven, the biblical case for the existence of mermaids. Episode number eight, ghost. That's not your grandma. That's a demon. Episode number nine, witches, necromancy, and familiar spirits. And lastly, episode 10, angels, their classifications, physicality, and sexes. Now, all 10 of these episodes are available ad-free right now, exclusively on Patreon. These episodes are only dropping one at a time over a series of multiple weeks, but you can get them all available today, ad-free, plus the addition of two exclusive bonus episodes at patreon.com/rightresponseministries. Again, it's exclusively found at patreon.com/rightresponseministries. Go and check them out today. And now back to our program.
So then how do we get giants again after the flood? So now we're ready to talk about legitimate theories.
Right. The right ones, which are
the
ours.
Right ones. That's right.
The ones we believe.
Everybody's wrong except for me.
Yep. There you go.
No, so in Genesis 6:4, it says that the mighty men were in the earth in those days. And when the sons of men came into the daughters of women. And the word there for when, correct me if I'm getting the terminology wrong, but it means that whenever.
Yeah,
the implication is at any time. At any time this type of sin happened, the mighty men were in the earth in those days.
Right.
Implying, and it says before and after the flood also. Implying that the way that it happened before and after the flood was that it happened multiple times.
Right.
So it happened before the flood, it caused the flood, and then in their stubbornness to sin, it happened again afterwards.
Some of the watchers who participate, or the watchers who participated in this the first time, were judged and bound by God. But the idea is that not all of them participated. So not all of them were bound and they were still available afterward to fall.
And the watchers, just to define some terms, when we say it happened again, we're saying fallen angels again took daughters of men and created this, you know, this hybrid, unholy hybrid, namely the Nephilim. And so we're saying it's not that the Nephilim survived the flood, or that there was Nephilim, you know, DNA, blood, you know, in Ham's wife, but rather that God actually was successful in eradicating what he meant to eradicate, But that what it didn't eradicate were the watchers themselves. Everything with breath in its lungs, right? But the watchers having a spiritual component, there we go. I'm being inconsistent here, but the watchers having a, that's an inside joke. We'll get there when we get there. But the watchers having a spiritual component as angelic beings that the Nephilim, their offspring, the Nephilim and further down the line, giants were wiped out, but the watchers themselves, and watchers, defining the term there, is just a classification of angels. So a certain kind of angel group that fell in rebellion against God to the earth, took the daughters of men, created the Nephilim. From the Nephilim come the giants. God sends the flood. It wipes out Nephilim and giants, but not the watchers, because they're not strictly or at least exclusively physical beings. They don't have the breath in the lungs at the literal capacity that all earthly creatures did that were wiped out. So they survive the flood. They're able to do that. They're able to take another form, or they're able to fly, or whatever they got to do. And then they do the deed again. And the watchers who had already done the deed in terms of taking the daughters of men and creating the Nephilim, they have been locked as a punishment, locked in gloomy dungeons. But the idea is you have two possibilities. One is the second incursion. Another group of angels falls from heaven. I'm less sold on that. I find it less compelling, because those angels that didn't rebel against God the first time would have seen God's judgment towards those that did, and it seems far-fetched. It's difficult for me to believe that angels, righteous angels that remained in heaven while others fell and saw the judgment of those who rebelled against God, watched that and said, "That's a great idea. I should try it." So a second incursion, that for me, that's harder to believe. More believable is one incursion, one group of angels at one point, a large group falling from heaven, but then only a subgroup. So one fall, one incursion, one large group, but then a subgroup actually taking the daughters of men, right? And they get locked in gloomy dungeons. And then this other group over here are already depraved, fallen, rebellious angels, which would be more likely, even having seen the judgment, they would be more likely than unfallen angels in heaven. That's
sinners keep sinning. Sinners constantly think that it's going to be different for
them. It'll work this time.
Well, for that guy, when he sinned, he got hit by a Mack truck of God's judgment. But I'm special.
I'm going to be different.
Or it could even be that they thought, like, okay, we're willing to be locked in gloomy dungeons. But the big thing is to thwart the messianic line.
Yeah.
And last time, God sent a flood, but we witnessed with Noah when he made a covenant and said he won't do that again. So now, if we can do it a second time, maybe our punishment is just as severe. But God won't stop the product of our rebellion, namely corrupting again the line, and maybe we can snuff out.
It's a kamikaze.
Exactly.
Well, the war's desperate. We've got to defeat the seed of the woman. We've got to sully this line. Go ram your ship into the into the aircraft carrier. Let's take them out.
Yep. And God raised a shield with a flood last time, but he promised no more shields.
Right.
So this time, maybe it's the same consequence for us, but it's worth a shot.
Some of the whole subtext of the flood narrative is saying, look how stiff-necked the curse makes you.
Yeah.
Look, and it doesn't just take a redo on creation, on the physical part of the land, to fix it. It's not just the stuff that you have in front of you that's making you sin. It's what's inside of you that's making you sin. And so to me, it wouldn't make as much sense thematically for there to be another fall of angels who witness that and then say, we should try it again.
Right.
But instead, the same group, because it's them basically showing what God is trying to get across to people in the flood, which is you need something more. Not even a global flood will save you.
We don't just need another Noah. We need another Adam. We need a new federal.
You, Noah,
Adam.
You're a righteous man. Not even a global flood that kills everyone but you will save the world.
And even in his family, you see this obviously with Ham.
And, and that's an astonishing thing. But the other thing I was going to say, just to keep defining terms, so the reason that we confidently say that it was the watchers that fell as the angelic category is because of why we know that those watchers were bound in chains, which is that Jude and Peter tell us so.
Right.
Yeah. In their epistles later in the New Testament, we're told by Jude and Peter that the angels that committed this heinous sin are bound in chains. And when they're saying that, they're referencing the first book of Enoch, which tells us that it was the watchers. And we know that the watchers exist because of Daniel chapter 4, where it says that the decrees of the watchers will bring this about. So there is a heavenly being categorized as the watchers And Enoch tells us that that was the ones, they were the ones that fell and committed this specific sin. And the reason we're confident that he's right about that, or whoever wrote the book of Enoch is right about saying that, is because Peter and Jude seem to think that the author of that book was right in saying that they were bound in chains in gloomy dungeons.
And they see that author as credible.
Yes.
At least credible, yes, in that part of the story.
The Apostle Paul loosely references the book of Enoch in certain places as well, and sees it as a credible source to gain knowledge of how the world works,
right,
and things that happened in it.
Right. Okay, so now, here's maybe just we could think, and that was super helpful, just as much as we can, I think, defining terms, like not just taking it for granted that everybody knows
what the Watcher is.
And so now, just again, some frequently asked questions. Let's not do the how could angelic beings procreate with women, because I think I think we could save that for an episode on angels that we're going to be doing. And so talk about what are angels? Are they physical? Do they have seed? Can they procreate? All those kind of questions I think we can handle with angels. So instead of how can angels procreate with human women, another frequent question that's asked is, how can average-sized human women give birth to giants? And so this gets into, well, how giant are we talking? I think we can talk about that some, so sizes, but then also in terms of just the sheer physics, how does you do that? How does a, you know, just, I don't know, let's say 5'6", you know, woman give birth to a 9'9"? I mean, obviously,
he wasn't 9'9" then.
They're not.
I think we can rule that out
when they're born. Yes, that's safe.
This isn't an Adam.
But still,
no, right.
But still, a baby that's going to grow into that size, or even more so, back to the grasshopper and cedar. Grasshopper, we were like grasshoppers in their eyes. The 10 spies say that, and that's the book of the Numbers. And it's not said that they brought a false report, but simply an unbelieving, bad report. And then Amos, you know, saying, that's actually God speaking through the prophet, the Amorites, you know, were as tall as cedars and I wiped them out before you. So it's not just, because a lot of people, they'll really, really, lean on, these, but these are the fearful wicked spies saying this. But that's not the only description of giants in terms of scale.
Right.
There's another description of giants in terms of scale that comes from the mouth of God through his prophet, saying, cedar, you person, them cedar, which seems about the same scale proportionally as them person, you grasshopper.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, so that it almost seems like a confirmation, like a cedar
the
is to a
works.
Person as a person is to a grasshopper. So it seems like God actually, through Amos, is agreeing in terms of the, at least the facts, not the lack of faith, but the facts of the 10 wicked spies. So how do you get, my point is, not just 9'9" Goliath, because I'm going to argue, and I think we would agree, that that's kind of a watered down giant, generations removed. But our argument is not just how do you get a dude who grows, and again, he doesn't start 9'9", he starts as a baby, but how do you get a baby that's still going to grow into almost a 10-foot giant, but we're not even dealing with that. We're talking about how do you have a baby, a 5'6" average-sized human woman give birth to a baby that might grow into a 30, 40, 50, 60-foot giant. Thoughts?
Are you a Christian struggling to find companies that align with your values and beliefs? Well, then Squirrely Joe's has you covered for all your coffee needs. All of their coffee is hand-selected and roasted fresh every day by a family of fellow believers. Try them out and you'll savor exceptional coffee while knowing that your investment supports a company committed to following God's teachings and upholding truth and righteousness, ensuring that your hard-earned money contributes to the growth of God's kingdom. Stop giving your hard-earned dollars to pagans who support evil. Right Response listeners have access to an exclusive deal. Your first bag of coffee is free. All you have to do is cover the shipping. So head on over to squirrelyjoes.com/rightresponse. Again, that's squirrelyjoes.com/rightresponse to claim your first free bag of coffee today.
The word soap makes Christian soap. What makes our soap Christian? First and foremost, it is because our soap is good soap, made exclusively from natural and organic ingredients. In addition to making a good product, we also promote a good message. Our bottles of soap aren't wrapped in heretical garbage. They're wrapped in sound doctrine and the infallible truth of Scripture. Lastly, we have a good mission. At The Word Soap, 10% of all our profits go directly to the godly men and women at Abolitionist Rising who are fighting to protect the lives of unborn children. Our product is pure, our message is true, and our mission is pleasing to Christ. So join us. Visit thewordsoap.com today. Again, that's thewordsoap.com. Everyone needs soap, so wash yourself in the Word.
I have a few thoughts.
I have some too. Go.
The first is if the women weren't turned into mermaids.
Okay.
Which is ridiculous, but they were.
But I mean,
but they 100. We're not certain, but we know that this happened.
Okay. No. Let's just. Hey,
we won't say for sure.
Let's suspend disbelief and
but
say
we
for
will
just
say
a second.
Definitively 100%.
What if they weren't?
Right.
Well, I will suspend disbelief.
For the record, that same Enoch that we were just a moment ago saying was so credible.
Yeah, I know.
He's the guy who says that the women, the human women who slept with fallen angels, their curse was to become silent.
At least, you know what? At least he's bold enough to come up with an idea. You know what I mean? Like he saw a bunch of mermaids and he was
man
like,
in the
how
arena.
Did this happen?
Right. Man in the arena.
Yeah,
he's the man.
I thought man in the arena. I thought you were saying manatee, and I was about to have to go over there and strangle you for your unbelief.
Sirens are just manatees.
Yeah, no, dude.
Who hasn't looked at a manatee and thought that's like a beautiful woman?
No, dude. No matter how long he's away from his wife, no dude is gonna say that's a hot chick.
I was gonna say those sailors, man. They look in. They start seeing dolphins. They're like, look at those lines.
They're desperate. They've been on a ship with a bunch of dudes for like 6 months.
No one's that desperate.
And they're like,
that's true.
Let's hope God's common grace. I just don't.
The grunting of a manatee at the surface, and they're like, that's the most beautiful song I've ever heard.
Let's go over there.
I'm jumping into the ocean.
Yeah. Let's go.
Tie me to the mast.
Odysseus is like,
I gotta hear the manatees. Odysseus has just like been on an, anyway.
Moving. Yeah, he's just been on an island having a good time.
With like
A goddess.
Yeah.
Like, he's not desperate.
Yeah, he's not desperate. Not manatee desperate. That's
and of course the Odyssey is historical narrative.
When we say the Odyssey, we're talking about like, you know, there's like Shelby's Civil War volumes.
But seriously.
Josephus.
And also,
and then there's the Iliad,
Homer,
the
and I'm not even. I'm being unironic on this. Like maybe a little embellished.
Definitely throw in there if you didn't list it, but Plato's conception of Atlantis.
Yes.
Solon,
Critias, I mean, and Timaeus.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's all historical narrative.
So Ben has thoughts on how women big.
If none of that's true,
giants.
Yeah.
If the women weren't mermaids, I would be open to the interpretation of them all dying in childbirth. Because even though they still they don't come out 10 feet tall.
Agreed. Right, yeah.
Agreed. But they'd probably be bigger than your average baby.
Yes.
I would assume.
And the world record, we confirmed this last night.
Right. So this was a pounds? Russian woman who actually, her husband,
it would be.
Of course
first
she was
all,
Russian.
Would,
first of all, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
The Russian people are strong people.
They're hardy over there.
They're hardy, yeah. So
the baby's name is Boris.
And Boris.
I have not.
He grew to be 60 feet tall and he ate people, Englishmen for breakfast. Ukrainians for breakfast.
No, anyone that wasn't Orthodox, he ate them for breakfast.
So Captain Romius.
So I believe she was 7'11", 7 feet 11 inches tall. Her husband, I think, was 7'9".
Which is insane.
The child was born, I believe it was either 19 to 21 pounds,
like 20 pounds
at birth. Yeah. And now the child did die. She didn't die because she's massive.
Which is shocking.
You know, but 20 pounds, give or take. And the child only, but the child was born alive and otherwise without defect, but only lived, I believe just a few hours.
Okay. So let's say for the sake of the argument that if you're going to give birth to a 25 pound baby, you got to be 8 feet tall.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. Sure.
All right. So that's already ruled out.
Right.
So either they weren't 20 pound babies.
Mm-hmm.
Or the women died in childbirth and they were 20 pound babies, or there was something else that happened. And I would put my hat in, because I know you have some ideas.
Yeah, go,
and I'm sure you do too. Mm-hmm. I have one idea that's just a possibility. And that is that it seems that the punishment would fit the crime if the child of this union experienced dramatic pain for their entire life. And so what if they actually were born a normal size, but the growth rate was so fast and it never stopped. Mm. And so they were constantly in agonizing growing pains. It reminds me of in the Silmarillion.
No.
Have you ever read that?
I have actually.
In the original Elvish?
I just got done with my 7th read of the Silmarillion Languages. And I intend to read it 2 more times.
In the original Elvish, though? Or, I mean,
no, not in Quenya or Sindarin.
Either.
Okay, well, neither. I read it in the Queen's English.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's still based.
Yeah. So in the Silmarillion, Morgoth, the Dark Lord, steals these jewels, the Silmarils.
Silmarils.
Right. He steals these jewels because he lusts after them. But he uses them improperly. They're supposed to be shared with the world because they're filled with glorious light that all men should behold. And he hides them away in dark caverns under the earth so that only he can see. It says that he begrudged the sight of them to all save himself and his most wicked servants. And so what he did was he put them into an iron crown that he wore, but that hardly anyone ever saw him wearing, because he hardly let anyone ever see him except his most close and trusted servants. And it said that the crown became an unendurable weight for Morgoth, but he refused to take it off. Mm. So the punishment fits the crime. The judgment for sin is pain. That's what it is.
I think that's a fantastic theory. Yeah. I lean towards that, but I think there's some other possibilities. But Brian, did you have anything you want to?
I think once you've removed all of the possibilities, whatever remains, no matter how improbable, must be the truth.
Both Spock and Sherlock Holmes said that.
Said that, roughly. So you really just have to lay out what are the options. They were normal sized and they grew really fast.
Right.
They killed the women in childbirth. They were born prematurely. And then, you know, one of the things that you brought up last night, right. I don't want to totally preempt you here, but this is a theme that you see running through the folklore and mythology of the Watchers. And you have to understand that this basic story of the hybrid, the demigod of the gods, Universal. Lower G, coming down, breathing with women, Greek, Roman, Canaanite, go anywhere in the world and
modern
you're going
to find— UFO abduction.
Again, modern UFO abduction. You're going to find this everywhere.
Right.
One of the things that you find with it is the idea that the Watchers or these gods gave knowledge to men. Mm-hmm. Technological advancement, knowledge that was far beyond their ability. Some of the things that we look at as mysteries in the past, ancient technology, ancient megalithic structures, astronomy, some of the knowledge that they seem to have and abilities were just absolutely mind-blowing to us. Some of the things that we would struggle to replicate today with all of the knowledge that we stand with.
Right, we're not just talking about pyramids and like, wow, that's fascinating, but we're actually disparaging them. It's patronizing. It's like, that's fascinating for you, Neanderthal.
Yeah, right.
But like, I mean, they even in Egypt, they found like hieroglyphics.
Hieroglyphics.
Perfect. I'm not going to try it again. Right? Because third time's the charm, but also three strikes and you're out.
Three strikes,
so
you're
it's
out.
Not, it's just not worth it.
You would actually legally have to leave the show.
They have found pictures of batteries.
Yeah.
Batteries. Oh, yeah. Like, and you don't think of like electricity and Mayan and acid, like plumbing and all, like very sophisticated.
So they've got these very sophisticated technologies, and the mythological accounts again and again connect it to knowledge given inappropriately, sinfully,
right,
by the gods.
By someone from the stars. Anunnaki.
The Anunnaki. We're talking everywhere. So it was fascinating to me when you mentioned the idea that, well, maybe these were premature, or maybe, I mean, if we can do cesarean sections today, who's to say? And people think, well, that's crazy. Well, why? Like, we figured it out. Right. Why would it be crazy?
Or even an external womb that's actually not in the woman's body.
You want to go one step further to just say, like, they mastered what our demons are trying to do today. Like, still, they were trying to do then as well.
Right.
This anti-image of God, anti-natalist, just perversion of God's design.
Absolutely.
Spit in God's face. So I think that's an interesting theory that I'd never connected this particular line of questioning to that data point before.
I thought this question was going to be silly.
Yeah.
But it's not.
It's actually fascinating. Helping me think through this.
I never thought to ask this question.
Yeah, so that, and I thought to ask it thanks to all of you folks, because we've done some videos on the giants and things like this before, and that was one of the frequently asked questions that, and I didn't, because I didn't think of it, it just didn't seem like, oh, I got to figure that out. But the more people, you know, more and more people, you know, those are the two big questions. How could angels procreate with women?
Yeah.
Human women. But then the other one, and that one I get, right? I already had that question myself, and we'll address that when we talk about angels.
At length.
But length. spoiler alert, basically just the answer, it's all in the Nicene Creed. That's right there.
Yeah,
if it's all right affirm, there. If you're a Nicene Creed enjoyer, you're going to have no problem with it.
You should be.
If you're a Nicene denier, then you're going to hate
Arius. Get out of here.
Like,
get out
come
here.
On, guys. Just repent.
Repent.
L plus ratio plus repent plus find God.
Find God.
Yeah.
There you go. But I just noticed a lot of people were asking. They weren't just curious about that, but they were, you know, comment after comment saying, no way an average-sized chick can give birth to a giant.
I've seen childbirth six times.
Yeah, right. And fair enough.
Fair enough. Tough. Yeah, fair enough. So, but that got my me kids thinking, were huge. And it's like, one, Ben's theory is absolutely plausible that they just kept growing. They didn't cap out at 18 years old or whatever, but just kept growing and growing, even not just growing for a long time, but even by 18, they're much taller.
Yeah.
So they're growing
faster and longer.
And longer.
If you grew at the rate a baby grows in its first 18 months of life continually.
Yeah.
You would be 60 feet tall
over the course of your
time.
Life.
I mean,
and at that time period, there were longer lifespans, and we've already addressed some of that. Primary water theory, check it out. Hollow Earth, but you know, so if you're growing over the course of your entire life until you die, and let's say you live 300 years, you know, and maybe they had a shorter lifespan, and that's what I'm saying, 300, when other guys are living 600, 700 years. I mean,
you start to understand the Enochian. Mile hires.
The L's, the 3,000 yeah. L's. Yeah, exactly. So maybe you still, you know, plateaus aren't necessarily calcified tree stumps. Maybe not that.
Yeah, maybe not that
unhinged,
far.
You know, yeah, but God bless you for those of you who are listening. You know, but you know, it's possible. We're not completely discounting
Ben. Like, but we can't say that.
But I think that you could have absolutely tall as cedars.
Yes.
Cedars are not 3 miles high.
I'm even willing to...
And God says it.
Right. So we That's know helpful. at minimum, these giants were about 14 feet tall. Absolutely.
Because
minimum.
Of Og.
Because of Og. We have the measurements of his bed. It wasn't some sort of like sex ritual bed thing from Babylon.
The point of saying how big is the giant's bed was...
Is to say how big the giant...
Wasn't to say he was a normal sized guy with a big bed.
Right. It was to say, look at how big he is.
What a weird interpretation.
Right. So it's 14 feet long, 6 feet wide. He's at least 14 feet tall.
And it's also not to talk about polyamory and the fact that he's, you know, in his royal power, he had more than one woman. Like... Abraham had more than everybody, you know, a lot of people did back
guys,
then.
Guys, Solomon had an embarrassing number.
Yeah, Solomon's bed was not big enough for 1,000 women. Right, exactly. And 700
so it's not a brag about him being a Chad and pulling in chicks. Like, that's not.
The red pill guys love Og.
Yeah.
And that should tell you all you need to know.
Yeah, that's they're all, the Pua guys.
So that's not what it's about. No, he's a large man.
Right. So minimum 14 feet.
Right.
Okay. And that's even after what I would say is some dilution from the pure blood.
Intermingling with.
And normal with normal sized people.
Because he seems to be a remnant, a holdover.
Right. Because he's like the last one outside of.
Exactly. So he is big for his day.
Right.
And that's part of why he's
in giant culture, if you're the king, if you're the biggest.
We need to bring that.
I made it up.
We should bring that rule back.
Well, until later, I think later on, once you get to Goliath, instead of you're the king for being the biggest, it may be kind of like a situation of orcs and cave trolls. The cave troll's not king. He's a slave of the orcs. Like, bring in the cave troll.
They have a cave troll.
And when you think of it, so Goliath has four brothers. There's five of them in all. And there's five capital cities in Philistia. Mm-hmm. And to me, it seems as though the kings were Philistines themselves. But the giants, after Joshua wiped them all out, the last little remnant that remained, they went to Gaza and to Gath and a couple other places. And so it makes me think that the Philistines as a country, when the giants ran to them, instead of just killing them all off as they were running from, you know, Joshua, they kept a few and breeded them and stuff as kind of like their prize position. Our town has a giant. So it's like, here's our champion.
You know. On a leash.
So, but my point is, because you'll find burials, or you at least hear these stories of a bunch of normal sized bones and one giant.
Yeah. Can you imagine you had a right response giant?
Oh yeah. Well, we do. We just don't talk about it.
Wait,
the first rule of right response
was I not supposed
is we
to
don't
say
talk
that
about
it. I'm sorry, guys.
Giant.
That's my bad. So disregard.
Well, just my
go
point
ahead.
Is,
yeah.
Giants at a certain point, I think an earlier point, like Og in terms of timeline, giants, I think if you're the giant, the biggest person there, you're probably the king.
Yeah. Sure.
Later on, that's like a goblin kind of situation, the goblin king. But then later on, like in a Goliath situation, I think you actually might be the slave. You might be the mascot.
You're their warlord. Go out and you're their killing machine.
Right.
Well, that's why they treat it with some. You're the champion. You're the champion that taunts the other side.
Like the gladiator.
Just like what Goliath did.
Yeah. Right.
So where I was going though is minimum 14 feet tall, and that's after some dilution, some generations of dilution. Have you ever seen a 14 foot tall thing? It's much bigger than you. Oftentimes we can think, oh, 14 feet. Well, I'm 6'5". 14 feet's not that tall. No, that's over twice your height. And 6'5 is big.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty close.
6'5 is huge.
Dude, when I tow up to a giant.
You see these like these pictograms where they say like average size guy, you know, 6'6".
Yeah.
And then they put Og next to him. It's enormous.
Yeah.
So all I'm right. even willing to say that Amos has some prophetic language, and maybe it's not an exact ratio. Maybe it's they're as cedars to us. They are as, or we're as grasshoppers to them, et cetera. I'm willing to say like, maybe there's some, you know, prophetic hyperbole in there.
I think there's probably a little bit of hyperbole.
But the point is, it's also as if, right. Like they are as if they are cedars.
They might as well be. For all intents and purposes,
that's what I'm saying.
There's no comparison.
You still wouldn't ever go up to a 6'6" guy, even if you were 5'8".
That's where you're going, Ben. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So you may not say like, you know.
Oh, maybe not 60 feet.
You may not say, oh, that person is, I measured it, it's 60 feet. But you might say like, I am afraid and that guy looks like a tree.
Yeah.
And you'd be right to say that.
Yep. He may not be 60 feet. He might be 15. He might be 25.
Be 59.
He might be 59. That I think is within the realm of biblical reason. However, one thing that we know he's not is he's not 6'6".
Yeah. He's not a foot taller than.
Now that brings us to Goliath. Even more diluted from, you know, from the giants before the flood. So I think Noah giants were probably the biggest. Then you got Joshua type giants. I think those are really big too, because if it's the angels doing it again, then you still kind of have first generation again, Nephilim and the giants.
F1, F2, F3.
So those could be similar size. And then you have Og. I think that's already tapering off. I think Og is tapering off because he's a remnant.
He says he's the last Rephaim east of Jordan.
Exactly. And the Rephaim, even in that word, is contained like not just giant. It means giant. But in some translations, it's contained not just size and giant, but some of these different tribes, it refers to sizes, but it also refers to abilities and techniques, skills. So Rephaim, some translate that as healer. And it's debatable whether or not, you know, the Rephaim, a particular strain of giants with their gigantic size from that particular Watcher and Nephilim line, if they didn't also have healing, either supernatural healing abilities from having some of the DNA of their ancient father, the Watcher, or simply at least knew the technique within them. Because the knowledge, exactly.
Fascinating.
And the witchcraft and the
Because the knowledge of Asclepius, the Greek god of pharmakeia, was also the god of the serpent.
He had the serpent.
And he had the gift of resurrection. Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, fascinating.
There you go. So the point is, so you have giants at different time periods, and I think in general, they taper off. So Goliath, we're going to say 9'9", not 6'6". We'll get to that. Back up though, Og, we're not saying, oh, he's written down, gets his special little section in the Bible because he's the biggest giant ever. No, he's the biggest at that time. He's the remnant of the Rephaim. And then going back to his fathers, the Rephaim in days of Joshua, easily could be also 14 foot. But also could be 25 is reasonable. 50 is possible. It's at least possible. And then pre-flood, same kind of scenario. And if anything, maybe even larger because of some canopy, oxygen, hyperbolic chamber. There's some other factors as well. Could be even bigger. Could be Noah giants, could be 80 feet tall. Who knows? But then beyond just sizes, you have different time periods of sizes, but then different tribes that could also give variants of sizes, but definitely give variants in terms of if not supernatural abilities contained innately within them, at least techniques and knowledge.
Oh, yeah.
And that's super fascinating.
Yeah.
Decline.
That is really fascinating.
It's not one thing we know, just again, it's not a 6'6" dude. And if I see any comments on this video that say the Giants are alive today, they're in the NBA, I'm banning you from the channel.
Do we explain that?
No.
Where that came from?
No.
Explain it.
Ben, you should tell.
Okay.
Explain how this happened. Because it's a common argument that you will hear.
The reason that we know this is because in Goliath's narrative, we hear how he was, what is the cubit measurement? 3 cubits, isn't that, or 4 cubits is what it says?
It's 3.5.
Something like that. But here's the point. Before we even get to Goliath and the whole scene with the Philistines, we hear a little bit about King Saul. The average height of the Israel male around the time of King Saul was about 5'7". We're told that King Saul stood a full head above the entire assembly of Israel.
Right. So he's Over 6 feet.
So he's a tall guy.
Because it says Goliath was Goliath of Gath. There came out of the camp of the Philistines a champion named Goliath of Gath. This is 1 Samuel 17:4. Whose height was 6 cubits and a span.
Okay, 6 cubits.
And
okay.
Then it describes and the span his is male.
Half. So 6.5 cubits, not 3.5.
It describes his male. He had a helmet of bronze on his head. He was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat of mail was 5,000 shekels of bronze, and a shekel is about 11 grams each. He had bronze armor on his legs and a javelin of bronze slung between his shoulders. The shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, very thick. Huge, thick. And his spear's head weighed 600 shekels, just the head. And his shield bearer went before him.
So we got about a 30-pound shield head, about 120-pound coat of armor, and he stands 6 cubits in a span or whatever. So we know that King Saul was about 6'5 to 6'8. Tall guy. Genuinely sure. Tall.
About a foot taller than the
about
average.
A foot taller than the taller. Average. Yeah. And we know that so he six, was seven. And we know that he was deathly afraid of Goliath.
Right.
Presumably because of the size.
So King Saul is going to be deathly afraid. And he was a warrior, by yes. the way.
Yeah.
King Saul is going to be deathly afraid of a guy who's actually an inch shorter.
And Saul has slain his thousands.
And so here's what happened. This is what happened. Was that the ESV?
The ESV.
So the ESV does this properly. That's why it says 6. Other translations that are basing it off the Septuagint will say 3 cubits and a span.
Because the cube is 18 inches?
Yeah, thereabouts.
Foot and a half.
But not to the Septuagint writers.
Yeah.
The span measurement in Alexandria, where the Septuagint was written, was different from the measurement of the ancient Hebrew Egyptian. Cubit.
The royal cubit?
Yes. And so they were reading the ancient Hebrew text, which said that it was 6 cubits in a span. They're saying, well, their cubit was different from ours. So we're going to translate it into our measurement so that the Greek speakers know what the actual height was. So they say 3. Well, then a lot of the English translations that do like majority text, base it off of the Septuagint because it's the oldest, or the eclectic. They base it off the Septuagint because it's the oldest that we have access to. Mm-hmm. And they just say it's 3 cubits.
Yeah, it's translated directly back over.
But in English, that's only 18 inches. And so he ends up being about the size of King Saul.
Yeah.
But if you actually base it off of what the Hebrew writers meant originally, which when they translated it back into the Hebrew from the Septuagint again, they made this switch. They say that it was 6 cubits, assuming the cubit is 18 inches. So the cubit for the Alexandrians was about 36 inches.
Yeah. And if you see, it's funny, if you watch with the armor weights.
Which is 9'9", just for the record.
It's almost 10 feet tall.
Let's call it 10 feet.
Is a cubit, right? So 2 cubits is 3 feet, and then 6 is going to be 9 feet, and a span, half of a cubit, 18, half of that is 9'9".
Yes.
So there's a YouTube channel that I've watched that is a... I don't know if I'll say the name, whatever.
Right, it's like Response Ministries?
Other than Right Response, it's a gun channel.
Okay.
Which, you've got guns every time you come on here, don't get me wrong. They had one of the world's strongest guys lifting this sword that they forged. It's huge. It's like solid steel, big old sword. And this guy is like strongman competition type weightlifter, not the really cut gay bodybuilder ones that oil themselves up, but the ones that like actually lift the heaviest thing. And he was trying to lift this, and it wasn't that heavy, relatively speaking. When you heard how much it was. It was like maybe 100 pounds or something, or 80 pounds. And he like could not swing it properly. When you understand what they're describing for Goliath's armor, to effectively wield it in battle, he would have had to be massively strong. Not just 6'6", strongman competition strong. He would have had to have the strength of mechanical advantage.
It would have been superhuman.
Being big enough.
Right.
For it to be proportional to him. So that's another argument, in my opinion, that when you look at the text, it's like, really?
And also,
this reminds me, by the way, just while I'm, you know what really grinds my gears? This reminds me of like the Red Sea crossing. It was really like they crossed the Sea of Reeds.
Yeah.
And the wind blew the water, and it's only 18 inches deep there. And so
that's
they were
a Ben
able
Shapiro
to wait.
Move.
It's materialist.
Yeah, it's like,
he says that. It was just a strong wind.
De-supernaturalizing the Bible. And I'm like, no. Prince of Egypt, Moses stood in front of the thing and whales swam by.
Yes.
Like I don't even care if there are whales in the Red Sea. Yeah, I don't
there
know.
There are, but there were then.
You know what I'm saying?
Like the earth was cool.
Goliath was not 6 feet tall. Moses did not, walk through ankle deep water at the Sea of Reeds. Jesus really did rise from the dead. Like we Come on, guys.
Don't you think we would have it. Some comment in scripture that says, like, by the way, it's pretty lame of Saul to be scared because they were basically the same.
They were like, right.
Yeah. Or wouldn't we hear something like, and King Saul was a giant among the men of Israel.
Yeah, he was.
But it doesn't say one of the, it just says he was very tall. He was a head taller than the men of Israel. Also, there was a giant over there.
Yeah, right. And then there was two a giant.
One says, this is a tall guy. The other says, giant.
Yeah.
A whole other
totally different class
yes.
of thing. Right. Over there.
So, okay, so let's get some final thoughts. And then yeah. I think let's round out this episode, just our final word for this episode. And then next episode, and Brian and I will both just, Ben is going to pick us up on his back and carry us. I can't carry
like
the ring,
Noah's
Mr.
Ark
Frodo, but I can carry you.
we're going to be like Og.
Yeah, we're going to be like Og. But we'll lean heavily on Ben and then take this giant conversation to a part two in terms of giants possibly today, but then also more recent folklore and different, because I think it'd just be fascinating to, with the cold open, pick back up with like the Incas or talk about, you know, just different giants and different realms, Cyclops and things like the Solomon Islands, you know, all the Kandahar giant,
you love to see
talk about, you love to see it. So, and people did see it. And
the Jolly Green Giant.
They weren't allowed to, the Jolly Green Giant.
The Jolly Green Giant, a terror.
But like, pick up the, you know, let's do, so Giants Today episode, mm-hmm. you know, or giants of recent, you know, but let's finish this with the Goliath, the 9'9", 6'6", he was 9'9".
Yes.
Guys,
and bring it home. Any final thoughts for this? Because this gave us a good giant origin story.
Yeah. Yeah. I just
typically
absolutely massive episode, guys. Like nothing to add.
W's in the chat.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
The size of this dub, as big as Goliath.
Giant, as big as
not
odd.
Small.
Yeah.
Giants roam to the earth and let that never grow mundane to you.
Beautiful. Amen. All right. Thanks for tuning in.
Real quick, right here at the end, I just wanted to remind you to become a member at patreon.com/rightresponseministries. Exclusively for our Patreon members, we have all 10 episodes, early access, ad-free. Some of my favorite episodes to be looking forward to is episodes that deal with Bigfoot or fairies or ghosts or angels or giants, or particularly our episode on witches. If you want to watch these episodes now, and you want to watch them without any ads, then you've got to join us by becoming a member at patreon.com/rightresponseministries.